Okay.
Welcome to the Futile Podcast tonight. Dean, hey.
Hey.
It's Joshua. We're going to talk about, from 2005, Serenity, the Firefly movie. Written and directed by Joss Whedon, who created the show, wrote and directed the first episode, two-hour pilot, and the finale, and maybe co-wrote only a couple. I thought he wrote a lot more episodes of the show. I recently finished watching the show before watching the movie.
Well, as you know, Joss Whedon is the showrunner, so he goes through all the episodes.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. His involvement is in it a bit, but
he'll tweak each episode slightly. He's one of the few people who goes through each episode himself personally.
Right.
Puts his little touches on it.
Yeah, there was definitely... I mean, because it definitely had... I mean, as a show, it was pretty consistent the way the characters were drawn out, for the most part. As I've been watching all of this sacred nerd material, I've been looking at it fairly critically because it's the kind of stuff I want to emulate and do as a writer, and so that's kind of my big thing. So from the show, you get the whole cast of characters, and of course, this being a movie that's has to appeal to a broader audience. It has to not necessarily just be for the loving fans of the show who.
And they pick the right questions to answer to do that. I mean, the Reavers are such a broad, scary boogeyman concept. I think
right. That
kind of was an easy transition, and then the whole River Simon thing was established fairly well in this movie, even for people who didn't know. So
right.
I felt like there was no catch-up.
I mean, that was the whole thing, is they did most of this... They really did do a fairly good job of making it be like, you don't need to have seen the show to get this movie, for the most part. I don't know, I'm trying to think. There was something that's bugging me about... Oh, I know what it is. When I first... Because I didn't discover the show years later or anything. I actually was going to school down south, and this and another show called John Doe were going to be Fox's two new, once again on Fridays. They were supposed to be like
that
Fox's...
That was the one he knew everything but himself?
Right, yeah. Fox was trying to get back in because X-Files had just ended. And I was like, what's going to be the new X-Files show on Fox? The new sci-fi, paranormal, whatever... And they had these two shows, it was Firefly at 8 and John Doe at 9, on Friday night again. Now, X-Files started on Friday night, and X-Files struggled for its first... I want to say the first three seasons were on Friday nights, because, I mean, that's just a shitty night to put anything on that's new and real. Even for nerds that don't have a life, even when I was a kid, I had a life every third weekend, and I would miss an important episode and be like, God damn it. And so, you know, it's easy to lose people, when, especially the shows that are geared towards...
Gotta get them on a Wednesday.
Yeah, not being up. So, well, X-Files moved to Sunday after The Simpsons, believe it or not. It was Simpsons at 8, and then it was something between 8:30, and for a while it was Futurama, and that was awesome, because it was like, wow. But then they eventually realized they had that sweet spot, and they could just test shows in there. You know, it was like
all
the new
shows that came on Sunday, on Fox at least.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now it's all animation from, you know, mm-hmm. 7:30 to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that was Sunday would have been a good time for Firefly too. I remember for a year or two there was another sci-fi show that was on, kind of like a precursor to Battlestar Galactica. I don't know for sure if this was what it was called, but it was on at 10 on Sundays. I want to say it was called Space Above and Beyond. It was about, like... It was basically, like, about, like, space marines and fighter pilot types in sci-fi planet space world. And they were up against some kind of a cybernetic, synthetic human, alien, something kind of enemy.
Sounds like Cyborg.
Yeah, it was something like that. I don't really remember, but it had a handful of pretty decent episodes. It was definitely, like, now the more I think about it, definitely like a precursor to the Battlestar Galactica, like, gritty, dark, military sci-fi drama thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but that's a tangent. I mean, what I guess I'm saying is that when I started watching Firefly, was right around, it was the first show that to me was like, oh crap, they're finally getting where they getting with the visual effects that it's maybe feasible to start doing episodic television that's like science fiction, you know, like telling a longer story, a more involved. I mean, they had done it before with Star Trek, which usually I would say was very not very well, I don't know, but I'm probably using the terms wrong. I think when I said episodic earlier, I meant serialized. Serialized is when you keep watching, yeah. And episodic is Law and Order. Serialized is like Lost, I think. And Star Trek was never terribly serialized. They'd have characters come back and stuff, but for the most part, it was always sort of like the same rehashing of plots. I'd always joke with people. It's like, here's what happens on Star Trek: The Next Generation or whatever. Some ambassador shows up and they've got some diplomatic meeting that's going to happen in a dicey part of the galaxy where things could get tense and stuff might happen. And up till the end, you think things might happen. Just when it seems like there's going to be like a fight and a real thing happens, oh, it's like, everything fizzles and it becomes the diplomat has to admit that he did some past wrong and the self-righteous captain stands above him and blah, blah, blah. Hmm. Except in the later seasons of Deep Space Nine, where it got very serialized because they had this war and the captain had to do all kinds of like awful things, and it was, and that was Ron Moore writing a lot of that, who then went on to do Battlestar Galactica. But other than that, and then Babylon 5, which was totally serialized. I mean, but that show was. I don't really know how this works. You might know this a little better, but some shows from the get-go are syndicated. Like, it's not like they got a run on a proper network and ended up being... And then we're syndicated into reruns. What would
be an example of a show that starts off syndicated?
I don't... Well, Babylon 5, I think, was just like... It was like on like one of our like equivalent... When it was on new, it was on like Friday nights late on one of our like... localish type channels, like one out of Reading or something, you know, it was like or UPN or something like that. It was a show that was like, I don't know who financed it, if it's Universal or Sony or someone paid to make the show, and then I guess
they were able to
farmed it out,
work off the fact that it was a remake of a show.
No, Babylon 5 was its own thing, and it's despite the...
Oh, I'm thinking of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, no. Battlestar Galactica was on Sci-Fi Channel.
Sure.
Which was Universal, that whole thing. But anyway, so it was seeming like finally they were going to get enough money to do a real go of like a live-action anime or a live-action like sci-fi thing. Mm-hmm. That was going to be... It had the elements to be cool. I mean, you had this hodgepodge cast of characters with the plucky kind of, you know, engineer chick, and you had the tough second command vice captain female, and you had the awesome captain who was just brutal when he needed to be, but still had like a sense of humor and was actually pretty funny.
Right.
And you had all this. I can just look at it having seen, and of course, when Fox originally aired it, it's the big thing. They started with like the train job. Mm-hmm. So they skipped the 2-hour premiere that explains how so and so got where. So when you as soon as you watch it,
I don't even know how do you get hired and have ideas like that?
Here's my thinking on it. My thinking is that it's a total, it's an in medias res thing. Like that, it worked. Believe it or not, it does make you, when you first start watching the episode, feel a little like you missed. Like I for a minute was like, shit, did I miss the actual premiere? Was it on like on a Sunday special Sunday premiere, and now the show's actually on? But then I kept watching, and I was like, no, you know, it kind of, it's written in such a way that just like with the movie, you can kind of infer some things. And on rewatching the pilot, I want to say that the pilot has kind of a logy quality to it that makes it kind of a tough first episode, sort of. I mean, the train job just has, like, a pretty good start. And maybe it's not the train job, it's the second episode. It starts with them, like, at a bar, and then, like, over a cliff, and then the ship comes up, and it's, like, it's just a really good opening bit. Yeah. Like, opening tease.
It's them getting a job.
Yeah, right. And so I can see where someone would maybe say, you know what, let's do that.
The Russians.
Right, yeah. But anyway, eventually you got the pilot. I think that was like one of the third or fourth episodes they showed. And so, sure, it did kind of mix things up a little chronologically, but somebody probably was like, you know what, Pulp Fiction's a cool movie. It does everything out of order or whatever. And it's like, okay, great. And for the most part, having just watched the last, you know, the episodes all over again for like basically the second time that I've ever seen all of them.
Oh man, you're a noob.
This is
probably like, I've seen this movie
a dozen times. Okay, fine.
I've seen the show.
I'm a bit of a noob, but I was there at the beginning.
Six or seven times.
I was there at the beginning and I could see how it could go, and I was just like, if this show gets a second season. Because even in the first season,
it talks about it.
They're constantly are. But the thing about it is, it's like there's little bits of, even in those first 14 episodes, I don't know, man. There's definitely filler in those first 14 episodes. There's whole episodes you just have forgotten.
One episode that comes to mind that's just filler, and that's the message.
The one about, yeah, you know, that one. That one has a little bit of good stuff about their war past, and so it's a little character, but yeah. I'm not even saying that strictly about it because you do a lot of character development episodes to start a show if you're going to do it right and pace it well. If you're talking about the main mythos of the show, that was always kind of tough to judge, especially from the beginning. Because you wanted it to be, like you said, you wanted it to be this conspiracy, this river, what does she know? Even though her character is tough to like because she's a crazy, crazy person. And so, and you're always just kind of annoyed by her because you're supposed to empathize with the crew. So the main overriding antagonism of the show, and it's even a problem here in the movie to a degree, is kind of thin, and it is kind of like not particularly well defined. You've got this history with this war for independence and this kind of oppressive totalitarian alliance thing, and there's all this interesting stuff that they hint at in places and they show about like the way class structure is broken down and how, you know, places on the outskirts need medicine, but the alliance sometimes helps. I mean, in the train job, they actually get the medicine. And then they rob from the Alliance, but then they realize it's medicine. And it's like, so the Alliance was going to do something good to help these people, so then they had to turn it back in. And in the pilot, you think it's gold bars they've got, but it's not. It's food. That was just the wrapping. So that was clever. There's a lot of... there's not as much character development episodes as I would like. It's more hinted at, which is a good way to start. The first 14 episodes of the season, which is all the show is, if there had been 10 more, if it had been a full show, you know, of a first season, of a long first season like that, or even if there had been 6 more, if it would have done it right, it would have done about 2 more with the main conspiracy, with the guys with the blue gloves. Mm-hmm. And it would have done a little more with the character stuff, hinting more at book a little bit, and maybe like a Zoe episode, because her character definitely needed some more fleshing out in places. I mean, she's a good character, but yeah.
Storyline with Inara that wasn't even touched upon. I feel like, do you remember the episode where they were running out of gas and she was like freaking out?
Right, yeah.
She didn't want to die and she pulls out like this syringe. It's like in a little box. Do you remember that?
It was like a suicide syringe or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the whole thing was with her storyline is that she was slowly dying, which is why she decided to get on the ship, just to try to...
Oh, interesting. She's dying of some disease or something?
Yeah, like yeah. So she carries that suicide needle with her just if she wanted to end it, and when they're running out of gas.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there was this whole... And that's like what they were trying to set up for season two...
Well, there would be a huge amount of stuff to set up for season two.
Yeah.
And it's just like with like another show I liked, Rubicon. It was on AMC, and I'll give it a second. I'll give it another shot. Even Walking Dead, season two is really when things are make or break. Season two was the major make or break for Babylon 5, though they had a lot of plot stuff happen in Babylon 5 season one to set stuff up too. They didn't do much with these first 14 episodes. It's kind of like they squandered some things in places. They got to show you some cool worlds here and there and hint at it, but the small budgets that they had, so much of it just takes place in the same dirt clods, and it starts to feel like it's the same old shit over and over again. And that's kind of giving you a sense of, like, well, that's where they're working. And if it had gotten popular and they had gotten more money and been able to elevate the stakes as a show, I think it could have really gone in some really good places and cool places. So when you see that this movie's coming out, first it's baffling because the show gets canceled, and I can't think of too many shows that get canceled and then get a movie made.
Like, that's like the first time that's ever happened.
Well, I mean, The X-Files is the only show I can think of that had a show, had a movie, and then kept having the show.
Yeah.
Star Trek always did.
They came out with the movie after it was canceled, but that was a sequel.
Right, so yeah, that's its own thing.
Yeah, it's easy.
That's different. And it was a pretty low budgety kind of, like, it wasn't on the level of that first movie of The X-Files, which really raised the stakes of the whole plot. Family Guy did, like, a couple of. Did something. Well, Family Guy just got the DVD sales increased.
Futurama got canceled.
Futurama did the movies and then came back. So we'll see. I mean, it might be that if the Firefly TV show had started in like 2005 instead of when it started in, I don't even know when was it? Was it, how many years was it before the movie was made? Was it 2001, 2002?
I was watching that.
I know.
I must have been at like a sophomore or junior in high school. So you're talking like 2002, 2003.
Criminy.
2002.
Yeah, you know, I was aware of Cowboy Bebop, so yeah, it was probably 2003. It was the fall of 2003. Well, then, golly, if the movie came out in 2005, that wasn't too far of a gap, I guess, maybe. Maybe it was 2002. I don't know, whatever. But the point is, if I think the show was just... It probably could have worked if it had come out... like now or a few years ago, like 2006.
You're saying it's ahead of its time?
I'm just saying it was poorly timed, its release, because of some things with the visual effects. Not that the visual effects are particularly bad, just I think they probably would be cheaper to do now. And I think that the whole zeitgeist of nerddom has really gotten bigger now, to the point where it might have done better. And it certainly, things like DVDs and stuff were even new when the show came out. So when the show was released on DVD and stuff, like, I don't know if those sales are probably good, but I don't know. You know, like that's what brought Family Guy back, was the DVD sales. Though I think it's just probably more expensive to produce a live-action science fiction show that's a 44-minute than an animated show that's 22.
Like, yeah. Futurama, you just hire more animators.
Right, yeah. So then this movie comes out, and it's like, okay, that's crazy. I don't know how... The only way this movie was made was because there were people in high positions that actually really like...
It was the fans, dude.
Well, the fans aren't financing the movie.
I remember Josh did like a thing on his website, like between Firefly being canceled and the movie, write the executives of the network, tell them that this is what you want to do, and people wrote like letters,
right,
like,
yeah,
consistently day after day after day after day after day, and the series kept getting these letters, and like, well, fuck. People actually want to see it. Let's listen to this.
And then he provided them with a script for a movie, and. And then it was like make or break, right? I don't even know if it was number one.
The fans, you know, pestering the network, finally did something.
I don't know, and I don't know what the numbers for the movie were. I don't know if they were great or if they were okay or if it did number one the first week, or I don't even know if it did that. But
I think box office wise, it was okay. Critical review was mediocre.
Well, critics are now a little more savvy about reviewing science fiction than they were back then, 2005. I mean. The critics now will look at something that's like a dumb comic book adaptation, and if it's done well in the confines of being a dumb comic book adaptation, then they can say, oh, this is a comic book movie, and it does this and this, and the character motivations make sense, and the arc's fine, and the plot works, and you know what, yeah, okay, it's a B. I can't give it an A because it's not pretentious, but... but even that said, yeah, there is some issues with the actual film of Serenity. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough to get a sense of... Once again, what he hasn't gotten right is the conflict. He's trying so hard to do a really good sort of three-dimensional, like, political conspiracy kind of situation. You know, it's almost like All the President's Men kind of stuff, you know, where there's all these big people in power, and then there's something they don't want out because it makes them look bad, and then you hire somebody or whatever, and then that becomes the threat and the conspiracy. And the only problem is that they have to kind of give away a lot of stuff, and they don't do it till, like, essentially the end of the second act of this movie, that you start getting a sense of, like, okay, what's going on? And then even when you get to that point, you're left being like, okay, so they have this disc with this hologram, and that's, I guess, that's irrefutable proof of something in this future, where the opening makes it seem like they're able to document all kinds of stuff in a really strange way. I didn't like the way that they structured that opening, and I was confused. I always thought that the opening of the movie, where it shows Simon save his sister, is actually him, what he did before the pilot of the show. Mm-hmm. But I've heard people say, well, no, because there's this comic book that takes place between the movie and the show, between the show and the movie, where I guess she gets captured again. That's what I've heard from someone. And that it's actually the second time he's getting her.
Those comic books, I mean, they really, you know, they're fun.
Right, but no, Whedon wrote it, so, I mean... Yeah. But it did... The comic book addressed dispatching the blue-gloved guys. It was like they were chasing after them.
But either way, I mean, it still works. Right. What's your problem? I mean...
No, it still works. It's just I didn't need for it to have been, like, conveyed as some kind of, like, oh, and there was a hologram. It's like, well, how much of that did they document as a hologram? And then later on, when so much of what their, like, little MacGuffin-y, red herring-y thing, or a little touchstone of the thing they need to save the day is the same kind of based on the same kind of questionable technology in terms of, like, from an audience standpoint, like, it's tough for us to ingest how much of what this complete, and that's why it is a good show, because it is a completely real, for the most part, completely original world, and it's realized to a degree, but only as much as you are able to see knowing both the show and the movie. So you don't know everything about how things work. I mean, like, they talk about Parliament in the movie, and I feel like you never got anything about, like, the actual way the government worked. You just heard the Alliance a few times. And
it's because you're going to get it from the brown coat perspective.
Right. Well, no, yeah, right. But I mean, these are all things that were just sort of... It's just such an ambitious project, so it's very tough for it to have gotten all the pieces right entirely. And so what it does do is good to kind of close a portion of things, but it also feels rushed too, because it is rushed essentially. Like, you could see that. I also don't feel like, I feel like this would have been a component of the ultimate finale of a, like, 5-6 season show if this had gotten to play out, you know? But not the whole thing. Like, that the whole thing... Like, that there was bigger stakes. Like, actually, like... Like another war kind of situation, you know, was going to be happening. Even though they talk about, you know, the war's over, like, you know, lick your wounds and all that stuff. And so it's tough for me. I think I just have an inevitable bit of sort of disappointment. And part of that is just in the fact that, like, this is what you get. And part of it is, you know, maybe my dashed expectations a little bit. For the most part, though, the film looks really good. It's got some great fight sequences. I mean, you know, it's all dancing stuff, but that's cool. And it's shot not with super shaky. This is pre-green grass and everything being shaky cam. So it's actually like they had to choreograph the stuff. The characters do their thing and do their part. I think, like everybody else... I mean, we'll go ahead and throw out the spoiler alert here on a few things. Like, there were the deaths of a few characters in this that felt I mean, they did kind of create a scenario where it adequately elevated that third act into a level of direness where you just started to think, well, okay, I guess maybe they're just going to wipe a lot of stuff out. And how bad is this really going to get? But then when things are over, you're kind of left being like, you know, they didn't actually need to go that far with it. And who knows? I think a lot of that maybe had to just do with actors being only so committed to the project as it was. I'd heard something crazy, like every member of the cast basically put something in their contracts when they were doing other things, saying that if Firefly comes back, they have to be, it's like an out for them. Because they all loved it so much. And you could see that. I don't know what it is. I remember just being kind of disappointed with the movie on the first watching. Now I'm watching it again further enough away from things. It's got some great, you know, it definitely has a great, you know, big space battle at one point, which is pretty cool. Even though it's not so much like a battle they're terribly invested in. They're all the time just this tiny little ship just trying to make ends meet. And that sort of is the main driving theme of the show. And that would have, of course, had to have changed eventually, like, as the show would have gotten bigger and there would have been more side characters and expansion on that and the backstory on other characters. And eventually there would have had to be major decisions made by some of these characters as to whether they were going to make a fight of things or whether they were going to just keep struggling in the background and doing what they're doing. But I don't know,
Yeah, I don't know either. Again, I've been listening to you for like the last 10 minutes, and you've been describing the movie.
Right.
The only negativisms that I've heard is you say you felt it was rushed.
Yeah, that you know, honestly, that's the biggest problem. It was kind of inevitable. They had in this movie. I mean, I can see Whedon being tasked with, okay, well, it has to be written. It has to have action every 10 minutes. It has to be written in such a way that new people can just. Can get it, so it's going to have rehash, it's going to have Jane, and, you know, it's going to have all these things that people that have seen the show will be kind of like, okay, so Jane is going to fight with the captain again about what they should do with River for the fifth time. And it's like, sure, they've created a scenario in the plot where that makes sense, and it kind of justifies things, and the captain is definitely... I mean, part of the problem is... Like, it really does get very dark and very dire, even for the... I mean, the show had some dark moments, but, like, the captain is kind of a miserable guy, worse than normally in this show almost the whole time. It lacks a little of the charm of the show, I think, just because of that rush. And something about the pacing of the structure. It's just, you get this awesome villain character introduced at the beginning, and it's great to have a villain that's, like, well-rounded and everything. But then he's not in it for, like, the whole second act, pretty much. I mean, I guess he shows up with the part with Inara really briefly, and that's a little bit... That's pretty good. But, I mean, here's the thing. It's like, really, if you break down the way the movie goes, it's like you introduce some sort of a... These bad guys are chasing after this girl and her brother. And where are the girl and the brother? Oh, they're with these, you know, these criminals... type smugglers, whatever, on this ship. And then the smugglers do their little action sequence at the beginning just to establish, it's like a James Bond thing almost, like there's always got to be that pre-opening action sequence to set the stage for how everybody operates and how everything is going to go. And it's kind of not particularly a plot relevant action sequence because all it does is it shows the threat of the Reavers, I guess. It introduces that to sort of ground that back in. And you know what? When I was rewatching the show, the Reavers are hardly in. They're in it like in like three episodes, maybe at most, and it's earlier in the show. And they kind of
really about the Reavers.
Yeah, they kind of left them out in the later episodes of the show, and it kind of stopped being such a sort of nebulous threat. Which was what was good about some of those early episodes is that was that component of it's like, well, if you're stuck out here, those guys could show up, and it could be a bad situation. Though the Reavers are, when they work best a nebulous thing. Once you actually see the human bodies running around, like, rah, rah, you know, with crazy shit hanging off of them and stuff, they kind of just look like rejects from Burning Man, or properly initiated members of Burning Man, or whatever it would be. And that's kind of dumb. The whole conceit of the Reavers is kind of hard to get your head around, because they're presented as this holy, inhuman, like cannibalistic rape psychopaths, but yet they still have to maintain their technology on some level, and so they have to have some kind of a functioning society and hierarchy and everything else, which makes them as a threat another point of confusion. It's just like there's so many, because the show, as it could have kept going, could have gotten into all these little facets and nooks and crannies of the politics of the Alliance and the backstory on the other characters and the situation with the Reavers and everything. It's just like the movie alone does not cap this show for me. And I don't necessarily think it was maybe trying to, but it does certainly try to kind of just be like, okay, that was the River situation. Yeah, she was crazy because she had visions of this terrible situation, which they kind of don't really explain terribly well. I mean, I thought they did a better job. Maybe, I feel like maybe I saw a different, the Blu-ray was a different version than the version I saw the first time. Because I feel like they gave some better explanation for why she would have known this stuff. I guess the explanation is that she was just aware of all the stuff the Parliament men guys were aware of. Because she's of the
psychic.
Psychic, yeah.
And they put her within proximity of people giving you secrets.
Which is kind of a dumb thing to have ever had been allowed. But yeah. I don't know. It's got some good fighting stuff. A lot of it is, a few bits of it in places are very reminiscent of just stuff he did already in the show. I mean, the whole like thing where they're holding the fort is similar to when they assaulted that station to get the captain back in one of the episodes of the show. It's I'm not trying to just necessarily find everything that's new, but you know, it's go to bars, deal with guys, have shit happen. There's a fight, you know, get into a space thing. Something happens, and people, you know, they make their jokes, and stuff happens, but there was just less of that in this. I don't know, it's just a little bit of a mess, and like I said, it's rushed, and I swear to God, unless this is in the show with a different altercation, that the end moment when he's talking to the bounty hunter, or not to the bounty hunter, but to the assassin guy, to the operator, mm-hmm. that the operator has, like, a moment where he almost kind of breaks down with them, and says, like, how do you go on? Like, you know, because his world is crushed, you know? He doesn't have his faith or his belief in the Alliance that he, I guess, was what was driving him, which was a good thing that they had, you know, that he's a believer. He thinks that this is the right thing to do. He knows he's a monster and everything else, which I loved. But this is something that needs to be done. And then apparently just seeing the totality of how awful the Alliance is or something broke him of that. And I always thought that he said something like that to Mal at the end. He's like, how do you go on having, you know, suffered such a loss or whatever? And then Mal gives him like a real flippant, like, you know, I don't know, you just, you know, gotta eat or something. And then when he's walking away, he calls him a whiner. He's like, what a whiner. But that wasn't in the Blu-ray, was it? Do you remember that?
You made that whole thing up.
I made that up?
Yes.
Well, I need to be a writer then, because that I remember when I saw it, if I didn't see it. That I thought it was awesome, because it was like him pointing out that this guy who was a badass at the beginning turned into like an emo little whiny bitch, which he kind of did.
That's all.
And it made the captain seem cooler.
That's all you.
No way. That version of the movie exists. I saw it.
I'll bet money against that.
Because
seen it in theaters several times. I've seen it on DVD. I've seen it on Blu-ray.
It was a total... God damn it, then. It was a total... like Whedon kind of thing to have written too, you know, with the captain just kind of like flippantly calling somebody like a stupid name, you know, and just kind of moving on. Because you know how he would do that? He would just kind of be like very matter of fact about things.
I think you just sat here and developed Malcolm Reynolds in your head so well that you knew what he should have said.
No, I think I just got a copy somewhere at some point that had an extra piece of footage. Maybe they do that with different DVDs in different places or something. I don't even know.
Maybe the last time you saw it, you had a little Jack Daniels. You know,
No nightcaps. I was actually completely... I watched it like in the daytime or something. I don't know, whatever. Anyway,
Ian, I don't know what you're talking about. You're saying that it's a mess, it's rushes all over the place, but it all seemed to work for me. Yeah, they had a lot of hurdles to jump because they knew they weren't going to have a second chance after this movie.
Right,
the chances that season two is going to happen now is still remote. So I see why they said, let's
now
get as
many... 6 years later, yeah.
I get it. You know, we have all these things that are open. The fans want answers to this. The only reason why we're getting to make this movie is because the fans are writing in the fucking studio every day. Let's give them some answers. Sure, we're going to have to condense, like, season two, season three, season four, season five, because they have the five arc. But for me being a fan before the movie came out, and then waiting for the movie and then seeing them answer all those... dots that weren't connected.
Right.
I appreciated it. I was like, okay, I see you guys were given a shit situation, but
they did all well.
It scratched my back enough for me to say this is great.
Yeah, it's good, and it leaves it open enough that like you can kind of still
it all worked.
The
for
world
me.
Can still exist.
You know, maybe it wouldn't have worked as much as if I didn't love the show prior to seeing the film. I don't know. I've heard that's the case with some people. Some people say it's confusing because they didn't watch the show.
I think that if you hadn't seen the show, I think with anything you're going to be that way. Even if you watch the Cowboy Bebop movie without seeing the show, you would want to feel that way, even though don't have to see the show at all to get the Bebop movie. It doesn't require that, but I think people are always like, you know what, this is based on something else, and it's continuing a story from that. It's not an alternate retelling or anything.
But knowing those characters when you watch that movie definitely adds to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So.
The big thing with, like, is, I guess, like, you know, it's like the whole thing with Kaylee and Simon, like, their whole sort of slow romance that happens during the show, and, all the stuff with Book, they would know Book was on the ship a bunch, and stuff, you know, was going on with him. Though he was off the ship a couple times in the show, too. And so was Inara. I mean, they both just kind of were there or not there, depending on how the plot did or didn't have a use for him.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I guess we could nitpick, but it just seems like...
Well, no, it's good enough to nitpick. I mean, that's like the same thing I said about, like, Inception or anything else. It's like... The worst kind of movie I'm going to be reviewing is going to be something that's like a 2.5, and I'm just like, yeah, you know, it's this and it's good. It's good enough. I don't even bother to get into, like, the real problems with it. But when a movie is good enough,
Inception definitely had some conversation pieces. This one is just, it got darker, but it's still free-spirited fun. It's like, not too serious of a movie. It can look at itself and laugh, you know what I mean?
People get killed. And major people get killed.
They do.
And, I mean, it just doesn't...
It's a whimsical fantasy.
It doesn't quite ring with that.
Western and sci-fi. You're kind of already in a non-reality to begin with.
Right,
so when certain things happen the way they do, you can just accept it.
I think it just really is an issue with the plotting of it. Because that second act isn't so much bloated as it's just kind of disconnected. I mean, it's the same problem with, like, the Futurama movies. Some things work better in smaller chunks that build to something, and this show and this movie almost feels like three episodes of the show. Kind of, it's almost got moments where it kind of takes a breath and does a little something extra or a little extra character reinforcement or something, but then that sort of ultimately slows certain things. And then the biggest problem is figuring out where the hell you are. Because it's a unique world, the bearings... I mean, they never established that in the television show either. A real sense of, okay, well, you know, Persephone is here, and Ariel is here, and, you know, and Haven or whatever is here. I mean, these different planets are where they are relative to one another and how far that means, like, how really, truly you are in the outskirts. Because that became a problem at the end of the movie where you literally felt like they just hop, skipped, and jumped from Miranda to Mr. Universe's place.
Right.
Like, with no time at all passing,
Well, I mean, that montage.
But it's just a pacing thing that just kind of throws you off. I mean, you could almost say that there's a similar problem with like something like in The Fifth Element, where at the end they shoot off with just a little bit of time to make it to Earth and blah blah blah. But I mean, both Firefly and even in Fifth Element, the whole conceit for interstellar travel is something, like you said, is much more in the fantasy realm than in the sci-fi realm. They don't attempt to explain how it is relative to any kind of real physics or to give you a sense of, oh, well, it would actually take this long to travel that way. They're just like, you know what? All of a sudden, it shoots off, and that's the way the Firefly goes. It just shoots off.
With anything, Ian, you're never going to get that much detail in a film.
Right, yeah.
You're just not.
Yeah, I mean, they did expand in the beginning a little when they talked about the Earth that was, and then they talked about how it was a solar system.
And if you wanted all that information, literally, you'd have to freeze frame that first scene in the classroom where they showed all the planets. Because right, I'm sure everything you just asked for is probably literally in that scene.
Well, to a degree, yeah.
You'd be able to see how far each planet was. But
and I guess the knowledge that they're all in the same solar system. The characters are so well drawn out.
Once the climax is reached its peak, I mean, you know, yeah, they've got to get the ship off of Mr. Universe's planet. It probably took like a week to get a signal out so they can hire some mechanic who could tow their machine out, call some person who can identify and notify Wash's parents, have the body shipped in, clean out the blood, take a day off so the crew can mourn, and then fuel that fucker up,
and get
try to figure out a way to get back through Reaver space, because there's probably that war, you know?
Well, I got the impression... One thing that they did do well here is I got the impression that they really did bring... They brought closure to Reaver's story, they brought closure to the Reavers. Because I imagine that Alliance-Reaver battle probably decimated both sides pretty well.
It was probably still going on when they tried to get out.
Well, they didn't get out. They were on that. That ship was done for probably a couple of months. It was like Star Trek IV style.
So, yeah. And then they had to get it wherever they wanted to go. And then they, you know, started doing details. So it was probably like at least 2 or 3 months later.
Yes,
those shots you're watching.
And you're right, it is sort of a montage-y, sort of extended denouement thing.
You can put all that together on your own, you don't need to see it.
Like I said, as a writer, I'm looking at these things, I'm like, you want to accomplish all these things, but you want none of it to take you out of... It's the toughest thing. That's why I'm glad I actually have a little bit of experience having done editing. Because, I mean, as much as you're not supposed to think as an editor when you shoot a movie, I don't know how much of an editor you're supposed to think of when you write one, because I am always trying, my struggle now is to not create a situation where time has to pass. Like, for example, the biggest thing I wouldn't want to have to do is have a scene that takes place in a room and then follow that scene up with another scene that takes place in that room. Because I need to go somewhere else, so then when I cut back or I come back... It's okay that time has passed and I haven't either had to do like a fade out, fade in. I mean, or something even more jarring. And so montages of a certain respect, especially in those kinds of places after things have been so crazy and dire, they have their place, but they kill me from like a structure standpoint because they invariably can take you out, especially when, and this is something from the show. Like, remember Out of Gas, like, one part. That's not a big deal. It is when you don't have it.
Sure.
And so you see the ship get utterly decimated at the end of the movie, and that's a big deal. I mean, they're not going to be able to just fix that on their own. They don't have any money. They're destitute. It's this situation where, like, I almost would have preferred that it end with the ship smashed up and not them. Just you can get, like, a... generic shot of the ship flying away kind of thing. Maybe it's too clean of an ending considering how dark it let itself go. I would have been better just to have it end, you know, with Reynolds standing by the ship smashed to shit and they say, what are we going to do, Captain? And he says, well, we got a mess to clean up. And then boom, cut to black, RoboCop. No, I don't know. But... I mean, it's something that the show did a little bit of, too. It would get a little schmaltzy and sentimentally in places. One thing that the movie does better than the show is the show really, really hammed up the, like, guitar western-y stuff. You know, it was like... And the opening theme to the show is... I don't like it. Do you like the opening theme to the show with the song and...
Yeah, I don't mind it.
I mean, it would be, like, fine if it were, like, somebody was singing it in a bar in one of the episodes, but I don't like it as the opening. I always skip past it. It's just, you know what, don't want to hear it. I think it tried a little too hard to be on the Western side of it. And in the movie, they downgraded that, and they made it a little more sleeker. I think maybe because this, they had the budget, so they could make things a little sexier and cooler in places.
Very little leans towards the sci-fi element. It's like...
Would you have more money, yeah.
Like 80% of it's leaning towards Western. It just happens to be on different planets.
Right, yeah. And that, I mean, that made sense because it was like, well, that's cheap. You go outside and you shoot in the outside in the daytime. And sure, you can have some sci-fi stuff and a little bit of cheap CG in the background or whatever. But it's not like, but then they did do the... To their credit, they did go to real planets. They went to Persephone a couple of times. And sure. Even in the movie, they elevated things on some level in some places. And that was cool. It's just like, that's...
Fall in the movie, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, that's just what you want to see. That's just what you would have wanted to see more of in the show. And it could have just lingered in places. Because that's what a show can do when it's really in its meat. It can just linger and just do like an episode that's about one of the characters in an odd environment or whatever, and just let that happen, you know? It could have been like an episode, and that's what I sit there. I sit there and I just love the idea of like an episode where, like, you know, Wash has to chase down a pickpocket that stole the keys to the ship or something, and it's just him like doing that and having to, you know, or something. You know what I mean? Like, and those are all things that I guess kind of can't happen now. Or if they ever did, it wouldn't be the place. When I get really invested in wanting to love a show or something, it's because it can really draw you in. It's that immersive property because it's thought out enough. It's got enough time to pace itself and to let itself breathe, and then. You can really get into it. And that's... I mean, that's like just what the movie didn't have because it couldn't have it. It had to just go with it and be like, okay, boom, there's the planets, it's solar system, terraforming, go, 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 go. Faster would be nice. Faster would be nice. And so, yeah, I mean, I shouldn't try to rate the movie based on what the best case expectations of a fuller series would have been. But that, it's hard for me not to. And even then, it's still just, the movie just had, it tried to please the fans, and it tried to be like a general thing. And I think it kind of, it's one of those cases where you kind of can't do both. You can't big tent like a nerd specific audience property like that, I guess. I don't know. And you can't do it completely successfully, but yeah, you're right.
I thought it was successful. I'm not saying
that it was bad. I'm saying I like it. I mean, I own it. I bought it. I like it. And I'll probably watch it again in 10 years or something when I feel like watching the show again, revisiting it.
I'm sure I'll see it again this year.
Little places. Oh, wow. You watch it that much, huh?
Well, people just like watching that movie. Like, I don't have to say, hey, I want to watch this movie. Right. More people like, hey, Josh, you're watching Serenity. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, that's a great film. I've been pretty quiet in this podcast because there's really not much about Serenity that hasn't already been said. It's a great film.
Well, I want to hear you say some, I'm going to put you to it, you know?
All right.
So can you talk about like your ability to just kind of watch it for the enjoyment factor of watching it? And I get that. I totally do. It's almost like, is this the kind of movie where if it's, you're flipping by on a Sunday afternoon watching TV and it's on and you get in on the middle of it, you'll keep watching it for a while? Like, does it have moments in it, like scenes or things that you like, that you get a kick out of, that's why you get such enjoyment out of watching it as many times as you have? Or is it a whole thing? Because my problems are with it as a whole thing, and then I'm trying to identify the little bits that are movie-specific that would be like, oh, well, I'll keep watching it for another 2 minutes because that part's going to come up, and I love that part, you know?
As a whole, it is satisfying. I mean, there are definitely... some moments. I'm trying to think.
Well, I'll give you one from this. I thought it was in the show, and then I never saw the show and thought I was having another, you know, embolism or whatever, like it did apparently with the movie, with the part that didn't happen. When he shows up to rescue Inara, and he acts like he's talking to Santa with the Buddha. Sure. That's funny. That's good.
I like the dialogue, Ian. I mean, like that, it's well written. It's good to see a movie with a lot of talking that isn't necessarily handicapped because of it.
They move the camera and...
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a well-written script. It's fun. I get enjoyment out of it. It's satisfying to me. I don't take it too seriously, right. So I'm not really too concerned about, oh, well, this doesn't, you know...
Right.
Because, I mean, you could tell that they didn't completely just disregard the TV show when they did the movie. Like, they stayed within the parameters of what they could do.
They upgraded the ship to a degree. I mean, certainly the color scheme was different. In the show, the color scheme was much more on a yellow-orange. I mean, that was maybe more just the catering to the Western than to the sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And in the show, I mean, in the movie, there was much more of a blue general tinge on the ship and stuff. It was, it was much more filmic lighting, which makes sense, you know. If you're going to make a movie, you might as well make it look better.
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to say it's a solid film.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you haven't already done this one, actually.
Well, it took me a while. I had to get through the show. I had to watch the show at my own pace, and then when I was done watching the show, I would watch the movie. I don't know. I think I like the show better than the movie, but I mean, maybe I'm just constantly chasing. It's like with anything that you really like, even if it's good and it has a decent ending, you still want more. You know, you're like, oh, they could have gone there and they could have done this. And that's me being a writer. You know, why there'd be an episode where this could happen and then you know, you'd get that much more with care. And it would just be so much fun to sit there on a Friday night or a Sunday night or whatever and have something like that to watch, you know, for an hour. And that it doesn't exist, it's like, ah. And then that it's like a real nail in the coffin, essentially, is kind of how the movie is to a degree, where it's like, okay, they answered some of the more established, lingering components of the show they took care of in the movie, and so, yeah, it's a complete entity. It's good as is.
Hmm. I think you are just more forgiving with anime, because it seems like with live-action pieces... You'll get into it, and then you'll like it, and then you'll start to love it, and then when you realize that it's that good, you realize, oh my god, it can't be that good, and then you start to turn on it, and then...
No. I mean, the problem is that with animes, by and large, the ones that are good, and most of them are shit. I don't like very much anime, to be honest. I'm not, like, really a huge anime fan, though I do own a lot of it, but that's just because I own the shows that are good. I mean, there's so much of that stuff over so many years that's been made... And so if 90% of it is crap and 10% of it is, you know, good to decent or whatever, then it's not too hard. And what you're finding is you're finding shows that are well thought out concepts and then have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Something like Firefly was not originally... as much as Whedon maybe might have conceived some kind of a vague end game at some point, it just wasn't produced that way. It was produced to be a network television show, science fiction-wise. And so it was paced in those first 14 episodes to be a slow burn, a handful of filler-ish types of episodes with little character bits. And, I mean, they didn't even, in the first 14 episodes, go back to those guys with the blue gloves a second time. They were being so precious about their main mythos stuff because they wanted to bleed it out, which is the problem with network shows. Now you get HBO shows and stuff where shit has to move at a pretty fast pace. Something like Game of Thrones or something. So, I mean, that's kind of the anime model. It's like it's two 13-episode seasons. Boom, boom, boom. Big things have to happen here, here, and here. And that's how you can judge if it's a show worth watching or whether you like it. And so few networky type shows with more longer seasons were able to pull off anything. And Battlestar Galactica got pretty close at it, and that's one of my favorite shows, but even I'm able to sit there and watch it and be very critical of it. And I can be critical of anime, too. I mean, for the most part, I don't think I give one a pass and don't give the other. I think it's just the reality of the way they're produced is such that you get a canceled, incomplete network show that had great potential, and with anime you get an actually fully produced show that was in this bubble of the Japanese economy in the mid-90s that ends up being kind of fun and working as a whole thing, mm-hmm. the way they originally intended. Firefly was not originally intended to be 14 episodes and then a movie. It was not, and so it, as much as that movie is kind of an end cap on things, like you said, it doesn't complete, it wasn't the originally fabricated conclusion to the show.
But just think of how much it would have sucked if you were a fan of the show Firefly and the movie didn't exist. How many more questions would be on the top of your head and we just would never know.
Yeah, but there's still a lot of questions. And then,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. I like that there's the movie because I like that it's got higher production value and you get to see the characters do stuff a little again, and you get to be with these people, these things a little more. But even with anime, even where sometimes things get canceled, and you know, you have to just deal with the fact that you know it didn't end well. It ended, and that was it, and that was the last episode. And just this kind of somber, like, oh, well, so it goes. You know, you got as much as you got, and they're still chasing after him somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. 4.5.
Well, you gotta give it the high one. Yeah. I'd probably give it 4. I mean, maybe a 3.5. Somewhere between a 3.5 and 4.
I'd shout between a 4.5 and a 5. I'm not even really sure why I'm hesitating.
Don't hesitate. No judgment for me. I mean, like, I'm the guy that will just...
I've just seen it so many times, and it's still...
You like it. It works for
still,
you.
The dialogue's still... The moments are still funny. It's like, even though they're going to happen.
Right. I mean, I laughed more watching it this time than you, probably because you just... If you don't remember... They're better when you don't remember it, because the captain, you never know how he's going to go. Like, he's like, remember, if I don't get back in an hour... You come rescue me.
Yeah.
Like, you think he's going to do the, like, you guys get the hell out of here.
And, oh, I'd give it a 5. I mean, yeah. for a movie to be that fresh each viewing.
Yeah, I think it's still
great pacing, great editing.
And a low 4 for me. Yeah, we would disagree a little on the editing just because of the ending parts, but that's not really that big a deal. For the most part, the editing is really good. The most part... It looks really good. I don't mind the camera following him through, like, for a super long take to establish sort of the thing. It was similar to what he did in the pilot, and that was okay. One thing I really liked about the show when it first came out, or not so much the first time I watched it, but just, like, one time when I watched it, was... the way that they sort of did, like, the shaky cam stuff with the sci-fi thing to kind of make it seem like, oh, well, as the ship's coming into land, it's like, oh, well, it's almost like the view of somebody using, like, a pair of binoculars on the ground trying to, like, zero in on this ship and find it. Mm-hmm. It does get a little self-aware in places, but I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. That was Firefly. That was Serenity.
Recommended, highly recommended.
Right.
Right now.
You know all about
Netflix it.
About the there's other stuff. There's books and graphic novels and things.
There's
it
a
all,
book that comes out after the series.
There actually is non prequel stuff. Because I know Patton Oswalt wrote a Wash prequel miniseries, and I know that Whedon wrote like a 3 or 4 issue thing connect between the series and the movie.
Yeah,
but you're saying there's something that's post movie?
The only other thing I've read outside of that is the origins of book. There's that book on book. So I read that.
Was he an operator? Is that his thing?
It's an interesting...
He was somebody important. That those guys, those Alliance guys in that episode where he gets shot, are like, they look at his ID card and they're like, okay, yeah, treat this man immediately.
It's a very interesting book because it starts off on the last scene of his life, him at Haven bleeding out,
right,
in this movie, and it just goes back to every pivotal point in his life backwards.
Oh, backwards.
Yeah, so it starts off on that death scene, and it goes all the way to the beginning when he was a kid, and you see everything in between, and how he kind of...
It just gives you enough to... You would probably love it because you're a fan, and then hate it because you're Ian, because it just gives you enough to know where your brain should be, and then when you start asking questions about where am I, it moves to the next moment.
Now, this is a graphic novel? It's a comic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who wrote it? Do you know? Did Whedon write it?
Whedon's brother. I can't remember his name.
Like Gus Whedon or something.
Someone.
That's what Zach always does. He says that somebody's always got like an uglier brother and his name is Gus something, you know?
it's something Whedon, John Whedon or someone. Yeah, he wrote it. You should read it. I don't have it. I think I am. I give it away, but...
Right, because you did the great comic book purge and gave away all your comics.
No, I think with this, what I do now is when I want to read a comic, I buy it for someone else, read it first, and then give it to that person.
Ah.
So.
Right. Well, you know you'll want to reread your comics, though, man.
No, I've gotten to a point where I don't need to reread a comic anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
So I don't own them anymore.
Not like a series? Like a storyline that you just really...
Oh, I'm always open, but you got to understand DC...
Alan Moore's The Swamp Thing is a totally good rereadable.
DC, the knife was too deep.
Okay.
And the wound never healed.
So it goes.
So
I guess it depends on what you're expecting, but
you stay in an abusive relationship,
right?
So long, right, yeah. And eventually you have to walk away.
That's what being a nerd is, though, man, and fandom and all this. It is like being like, okay, I'm going to give you my heart TV show that probably is going to get canceled, and then after three episodes, when you've been canceled, you're going to break it again.
Yeah,
and I think people were super stoked about like HBO finally starting to sort of embrace fantasy sci-fi with Game of Thrones, and then that got a second series, and that's been popular with like a lot of people. That's what I say about Firefly maybe being just bad timing. If Firefly were on, imagine if Firefly were a 13 episode HBO season series. They could have a little bit of tits and a little bit of swearing. Not that they would really need that, but it could just make it a little gungier in places, you know?
Yeah, but you gotta understand that it shows like Firefly that was like the forerunner for what's on now. Like getting those good, decent, well-characterized, well-storied.
But I'm trying to think of how many of those shows actually exist. I mean Battlestar Galactica.
In the early 2000s, there wasn't that many.
And there still aren't, really. I mean, what you got Sci-Fi Channel. Has been doing original stuff for a few years. Battlestar Galactica is probably the only good thing they've done. Eureka is okay. I've seen some episodes of that. I never got into the spin-off Eureka show, Warehouse 13. It seems like so many of these shows are just the same old kind of almost Mulder and Scully. Yeah, it's almost like a Mulder and Scully paradigm thing where it's like, oh, you get the chick and the dude and their partners, and then you give like a kooky mad scientist guy that they either work for or consult with, and then blah blah blah. And I'm trying to think of, I mean, USA is all kind of hip character-y shows, you know. There's that one Psych, which seems pretty funny, but I never really have gotten
it's
into
a big
it.
One. And Monk is on USA, right?
Monk was. I don't think that it's been on for a few years. Burn Notice, which I kind of eventually just kind of stopped watching. All the USA shows are like network 80s shows, if that makes any sense. They all feel very much so like mostly filler, but occasionally like there's a consistent plot that like keeps you going, like so they use at the beginning and the end of every episode to kind of tease you into it. A Miami Vice kind of thing, or a LA Law kind of thing, or whatever. Yeah, it's just these kind of like light drama, faint comedy thing. That's USA. TBS doesn't have, is all TBS had like one or two sitcoms for a while, but then they've got like Tyler Perry does stuff, and that's about it for their original stuff. TNT has like The Closer. Oh, they've got that Falling Skies, which just looks like sort of a humans defending themselves against it basically looks like War of the Worlds, the TV show. Mm-hmm. I'm not terribly interested in that. And then they've got The Closer, a handful of sort of their police procedurally kind of style, and then Law and Order reruns.
I wouldn't know, Ian.
But I'm saying, like, I don't know if even to this day, if if there is much in the way of an actual of real, really particularly good science fiction-y stuff. I mean, Doctor Who, people say, is good, but I've tried to watch that, and I haven't gotten into the Moffat stuff. I heard Moffat, Stephen Moffat, is the guy that took over as writing the show at some point. He got really good with it. So, who knows? But even that show is very episodic, I think, and goes on forever and ever and ever. I don't know. You know, it's like what I want is why I like science fiction is because of the spectacle. But you need everything else first. You know, the whole Aristotelian thing, right? But science fiction allows you great spectacle, too. So you orchestrate a show with a beginning, a middle, and an end, an epic scale, a handful of characters. It goes places. It goes places unexpected. It solves problems in ways that are logical, but, like, once more, kind of surprising and unexpected. And then you do that. And if you do that, then you get something that can be a lot of fun. And, you know, it's not easy. And that's, you know, that's the game I'm going to try to get in on when we move down there.